the Right Honourable the Lord Mayor of Perth, Mr. Basil Zempas.
Thanks, everybody. Good evening. Can I welcome you all to the City of Perth June 2022 agenda briefing session and formally declare the session opened at exactly, let's just make sure I've got this time right, is that time wrong? At exactly 5 p.m. Can I respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land upon which we meet, the Whadjuk Noongar people of Western Australia? I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. It is a privilege to be standing on Whadjuk Noongar land. Siya, can I ask you to recite the prayer, please?
Almighty God, under whose providence we hold responsibility for this city, grant us wisdom to understand its present needs, foresight to anticipate its future growth, and grace to serve our fellow citizens with integrity and selfless devotion. And to thee be all blessing and glory forever. Amen.
Thank you, everybody. Please be seated. Now, my understanding is that tonight there is no live stream because of the power blackout that occurred through the city yesterday, and I have been advised in the last 5 minutes or so that there will be no live stream tonight. But Michelle, perhaps you could just clarify that. Is there any further explanation? Is there any further update on that, or that is in fact correct?
No, but our audio will be recording, Lord Mayor.
Okay, all right. So you'll be able to hear us, but you cannot see us. So we will just say that in accordance with Council Policy 1.4, the meeting is being recorded, although it won't be live streamed on this occasion because of that technical glitch which occurred yesterday, and the recording will be made available on the City's website following the meeting. Let's go through the attendance, and that is item 3. And in attendance today, I just had a phone call just a short time ago from the Deputy Lord Mayor, who says that she has been held up and is endeavouring to get here at the earliest opportunity. Also in attendance, Councillor Sandy Angie, Councillor Clyde Bevan, Councillor Brent Fleeton, Councillor Liam Gobbett, Councillor Rebecca Gordon, Councillor Victor Coe, and Councillor Catherine Leeser. In addition, I welcome the Chief Executive Officer, other officers, and any members of the public or media in attendance. We've received an apology from the Infrastructure and Operations Alliance, who are currently impacted by leave and COVID. There are no members on an approved leave of absence, and I will remind councillors to please submit any applications for leave of absence prior to next week's ordinary council meeting. As you know, announcements are generally saved for the ordinary council meeting. As I announced in the chamber at the May ordinary council meeting, I will be away next week and the Deputy Lord Mayor will be the presiding officer. I will be travelling to Rome as Lord Mayor on the inaugural direct flight from Rome to Perth. I'm attending as a guest of Qantas. Flights, accommodation and transfers are covered by Qantas. The Premier of Western Australia and the Chair and CEO of Qantas are among others who will be part of this trip. It's an excellent opportunity for me to spread the word about our City of Light and tell Rome and Busto that we are open for business. Included in my itinerary is the opportunity to meet with and promote Perth at meetings and functions hosted by Rome Airport and Qantas. I will be meeting the Lord Mayor of Rome, and look forward to that very much, and the Mayor of our sister city, Busto. And I'll also be meeting with brands based in Rome who are exploring opportunities here in Perth. This is a really good chance for me to advocate for our city. I'm excited by the opportunity and the possibilities this direct travel route represents for Perth, and as I said, I welcome the opportunity to advocate for our city overseas. I will be accompanied by my wife Amy on this 5-day trip. I will be accompanied by Amy at personal expense. The other item that I wish to announce today is that on Saturday, the first of the major winter events that are coming to Optus Stadium happens on the Sunday, and that is the Rugby League Game 2 State of Origin Series. There's always great interest in State of Origin. It's a coup for WA to have the match played here at Optus Stadium. And on Saturday from 11 a.m., members of the public will have the opportunity to come and meet the captains and coaches as well as legends from both camps, New South Wales and Queensland. They'll be able to hear and see the pre-match press conference with both captains and coaches live, the opportunity to hear from both after the press conference, and there will also be a number of ticket giveaways held in Forest Place from 11 o'clock on Saturday. And I would urge all of those rugby league fans and indeed sporting fans to get into the heart of our city. And can I thank the NRL for their assistance in helping to promote this event, which of course promotes Sunday's blockbuster. They've been excellent to work with. Our thanks also to Tourism WA, Optus Stadium and the state government. Now we move on to item 5, and item 5.1, public questions. Public question time will be held at the ordinary council meeting next week. So item 5.2, deputation. See, have we got any tonight?
No, Lord Mayor.
Thank you. Are there any deputations from the floor? Would it be a not? Moving to item 6 on the agenda, disclosures of interest. CEO, any tonight?
Yes, Lord Mayor. Councillor Gobbett has disclosed a proximity interest and impartiality interest in item 12.1. His proximity interest relates to 1 Adelaide Terrace and 2 Plain Street as they directly abut his residential address. And the impartiality interest relates to 69 to 75, 77 to 85, 87 to 93, 95 to 99 Barrack Street, as these properties are the subject of a development application, and he briefly discussed the Liberty Theatre proposal with Mr. Humich prior to DA submission.
Thank you, CEO. Are there any disclosures of interest from the floor tonight? Councillor Gordon, good evening.
Good evening. Apologies for not providing already, but I have an impartiality interest on the same matter, as my apartment is listed on the heritage survey. However, there is no change proposed to that property, so it's just impartiality, and I'll send the form through.
Impartiality. Thank you, Councillor Gordon. Are there any other disclosures of interest from the floor? No, thank you, Councillors. Item 7, confirmation of minutes. 8, questions by members which due notice has been given. 9, correspondence and 10, petitions will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting next week. So we're going to move to reports now, and as we move through the reports, I will ask if any councillors have questions in relation to these items. So 11, Planning and Economic Development Alliance reports. 11.1 is the draft open space framework. I will mention that I think from elected members we had in the vicinity of 60 questions. Can I thank all of my fellow councillors for their hard work, interest and application to the task. It is greatly appreciated by all of us, and we thank you for your hard work. Can I also thank the administration for, I think, answering 57 of the 60 questions in a very timely fashion, and I appreciate there's a good deal of work that goes into answering those questions adequately and thoroughly, and can I thank the administration, and Michelle, perhaps you could pass that on to those who were responsible for that process, many of whom are here in the room tonight. And I think it's worth reflecting on how well we are working as a team, both elected members and our senior administration. That's the process, and that's the way it's working, and it's working exactly as we would hope. So there are 5 questions I notice, would notice from Councillor Fleeton, 7 from the Deputy Lord Mayor, 7 from Councillor Gordon, and 9 from Councillor Andrew. We'll start with you, Councillor Fleeton. Anything further? Deputy Lord Mayor not present. Councillor Gordon?
Just with regard to the, was my question 18, but Councillor Fleeton asked the same question 3. The proposed lot for Northbridge, is that the entirety of the lot or just the rear of the premises, which is already flat?
Thanks, Councillor Gordon. See you.
If I could invite the General Manager of Planning and Economic Development to answer this question and any others in relation to this item.
Thank you. Through you, Lord Mayor, I believe that it is just this lot. It is a small lot, 569 square metres in area, but I can double check that for you to make sure.
Thank you, Councillor Good. Well, good, thank you. So, Councillor Fleeton, Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Gordon. Councillor Angie?
Just in relation to the answers provided to my questions, when it talks about the minor green space intervention at Totterdale Park with improved facilities, what does that actually encompass?
Mm-hmm. We'll go straight to you if we could, General Manager.
Thank you. Through you, Lord Mayor, that will need to be properly scoped when the project comes forward, but I think as per the previous briefing notes that have been provided to elected members, that will include upgrades to the amenity in the park, barbecues and similar facilities. So I can spell that out in a little more detail for you if you like, ahead of next week's meeting, but I think it's the info we've previously given.
Yes, if I could have a further explanation, that'd be good.
Okay, thanks, Councillor Andrew. Thank you to the General Manager. Was there anything further from your questions, Councillor?
No, I think that's okay. There's just one that's the further information we provided by next week in relation to Harold Bowles Gardens.
Yes, and that information will be provided, yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Councillor Andrew. Were there any further questions from any councillors? Councillor Lisa.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. My question is just regarding a couple of clarity points in the actual draft open space document. I'm referring to page 9 of that document, or page 19 of our agenda. There's a statement in there that says future growth will predominantly be characterised by smaller households, and it references the draft local planning strategy and the most recent census data. If we ask, my real question is, how do we know they're going to be smaller in the future? Are we really looking at trends, or are we going by one set of data? So I'm just keen to know why we're making that statement. They're going to be smaller household sizes.
Thanks, Councillor Lisa. We'll go straight back to the General Manager of Planning and Economic Development, please. Thanks.
Through you, Lord Mayor, I think the information that we've got is based on our IQ data that we have that does look at trends. I can confirm that for you ahead of next week's meeting, but I think it's, as you quite rightly pointed out, it aligns with the data we've used for the local planning strategy.
Okay, and one follow-up question.
Sure, Councillor.
Lord Mayor, on page 20 of our agenda, or page 10 of the draft strategy, there's quite a small heat map on there. When we actually go out to invite comment, are we going to have these maps and things a bit bigger?
That's hard. My eyes are starting to fail me, actually, Councillor Lisa, and that would be useful for me as well. I did struggle looking at that. General Manager?
Through you, Lord Mayor, there will be an online version that people could use to expand, I guess, but if there's concern about that image before we release the final version, we can certainly make that bigger.
Thank you, General Manager. That's all, Councillor Lisa. I'll just acknowledge that the Deputy Lord Mayor, Di Bain, is with us now. Deputy Lord Mayor, there is no video recording tonight, hence the reason for me to acknowledge that on the record with audio because of the some power outages yesterday, and it's just caused a glitch in the system, which will be fixed by next week. Are there any other questions? Oh, sorry, and we did already ask the councillors who had given questions with notice if there was any follow-up required from them, Councillor Fleeton, Councillor Gordon, Councillor Andrew, and Deputy Lord Mayor, you had some questions. Is there any follow-up required from you for the moment?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I did actually have a follow-up. I just wondered, so in my questions I asked about rooftop spaces, and the response was that that's kind of private owned space, and there might be some provision in the CPS when we finish that. I just wondered, what about car parks that we own as the city? Have we considered those rooftop spaces as potential opportunities for open space for the public?
Thanks, DLM. We'll go to the General Manager of Planning and Economic Development once again.
Through you, Lord Mayor, I can't say for certain that we haven't. It's obviously not included in the document. I'll check whether or not we have investigated those opportunities, and I'll let you know before next week.
Would you say it is an opportunity?
There's always an opportunity. Whether or not it'll be feasible is another thing. So that's why I would need to check whether or not they've looked at that and whether or not that would be feasible.
Just one more, if I may, Lord Mayor. I've noticed in some other councils they're building, I guess, bridges that have become structures like animal freeways and animal overpasses and things like that, but they're actually quite large structures. And I just wondered, as part of this investigation, if we looked at being a little bit more creative and innovative with some structures that we may be able to build in the future to encourage green open spaces.
I'm sorry, Jim, just before you ask, just for my benefit, perhaps, what is an animal freeway or an animal bridge?
It's like a bridge, but with all grass and plants and things to encourage animals to go use the overpass of a freeway instead of getting run over on
so
the road.
So is the question, have we investigated those?
Have we looked at those as options? We know that we have a cycle bridge that's going to be built to Vic Park. We know we have the causeway. We know we have a few bridges already.
Okay.
Are those
yep.
things that we've looked at?
Thank you. Through your Lord, may I need to confirm with the team whether or not they did consider that. I would suspect that it's probably not something they've considered feasible because you need to have the right location with the right ecology to actually support the effectiveness of those bridges. But I will double check with the team whether they've taken that into account.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. Councillor Bevan?
Lord Mayor, I have a question. Page 26 of 300, size and function. It has Supreme Court Gardens as rated as passive rather than active compared to Langley Park. Can you explain that, please?
Thanks, Councillor Bevan. GM.
Thank you. Through you, Lord Mayor. So I guess the differentiation between the two is in an active space is really more for sport type activity, where passive space is less so, and I guess that's why the differentiation is between those two pieces of open space. I think Supreme Court Gardens is more passive.
Thank you, GM. Councillor Bird. Hi, are there any further questions from any councillors? Councillor Gordon.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just a follow-up question regarding nature play spaces. Not a fan, to be honest. Are we able to see, like, a concept of what we're proposing to replace the current playgrounds with?
Not a fan of the nature play.
Well, it's not so much me, but the children are not a fan.
Okay, yeah.
Of what I've written in my question was a contrived nature space. Mm. I don't think they translate well. I know playing in nature is good for children, but I don't believe they can be replicated.
GM?
Thank you. Through you, Lord Mayor. We've not planned the detail of these spaces yet, but I'm sure the team can drag out a couple of concepts of other play spaces that they would use as reference spots. So happy to provide that info.
Councillor Angie. This is a new question, yeah. Now, not relating to the
It's a new question, yeah. But just following on, I guess, from that, yeah, I think I actually agree with having experienced that through my own 3.5-year-old, that the real playground probably works better for kids than the, you know, a few logs and stepping stones. But, you know, I guess that's just our opinions in the end, but has research been done? Is this research based that the city is, proposing this on? First question, and second is, you know, if you are going down this path, then will there be a balance across the city? We're not going to rip out all the traditional playgrounds and replace them.
GM?
Thank you. Through you, Lord Mayor, I'll confirm the research that they've done into playgrounds. I know that this team particularly is consistently researching best practice nationally and internationally of a range of public realm improvements, but I will come back to you with information on what specific research they've done. In terms of rolling out across the balance of the city, I think that would occur as per the asset upgrade program. So I doubt they would go in and remove out of sync with the asset upgrade program.
Thanks, Jim. Any further questions? Councillor Pleaton.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Might be tied to an existing question and answer.
Is this separate to your...
Well, it's a follow-up.
Okay.
The Waterbank site and the negotiations or any discussions we've had with the state, is there any chance of using that as a short-term active site?
Mm-hmm. General Manager.
Through you, Lord Mayor. I think in response to the question posed by Councillor Fleeton, we said we could have those discussions separately.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I suggest we put in the framework, but that could be an offline action.
Thanks, Chair. Anything else from anyone else? Thanks, councillors. Let's go to 12, Community Development Alliance reports. 12.1 is the draft local heritage survey. And I know Councillor Gobbett has a proximity interest and an impartiality interest and is tapping out. Councillor Gordon, you are staying with us. It was impartiality here, wasn't it? Yep. Thank you. Are there any questions on this item? Thanks, Councillor Aliza.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'm interested in the practical implications of being listed on our local heritage survey. So, for instance, if we get to October and we decide that it's okay to list these properties, if a proponent wants to do a development, do they then have to hire a heritage consultant to do extra work for them, or is it something that a proponent can deal with without a consultant? That's the general gist of my question. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Lisa. We're going to go to GM.
Yes, if we could invite the General Manager of Communities to answer the question.
And just before the GM begins to answer, I'll note that in attendance also we have the Cultural Heritage Planner, Alethea de Boulay. I hope I said that right, Alethea. How are you going? Thank you. To respond to any questions of a specific and technical nature, Alethea knows her stuff here through Kylie. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, through you. The Local Heritage Survey is under the Heritage Act, so it's not under the Planning and Development Act. So there is no direct statutory role in respect to this survey. It is really about accessible public record of places of cultural heritage significance and providing a collated identification of places of cultural heritage significance. So no statutory requirements for planning. Thank you.
Councillor Lazar?
So a proponent would not be required to do a special consultant report, especially on heritage merit of their application?
Thank you.
GM? Through the Chair. Thank you.
Sorry, thank you, Lord Mayor. No, it is dealt with as a local heritage survey. It is not the heritage list. Thank you.
Any further, Councillor Lazar?
Yes, I do have, sorry, I have further questions. So with the city proposed to Element to assess 316 properties, and they came back and said, yes, all 316 are worthy of merit. So did we give them a brief as to what those specific requirements would be, like one Hercon factor or multiple Hercon factors, or how do we brief that out, please?
Jim.
Through the Lord Mayor. Yes, noting, as you said, there are the conventions and the factors that they have used and applied as per the State Department guidelines. So they have come back and acknowledged that all of the 316 are of cultural heritage significance. We would note that in terms of a comparison, somewhere like Fremantle has over 3,500 places on their local heritage survey. And there are other localities close by that are also similar. So Subiaco, East Fremantle will have around 800 places each as well. So again, the intent is using the guidelines and the criteria factor that are set out in the department guidelines. Thank you.
Okay, and last one from me.
Sure.
Sorry, Lorne.
No worries.
So the recommendation is that we approve the local survey and that we approve inclusion of places that don't have any submissions, but you want to bring the ones that are controversial back to us in October. Am I reading that correctly?
Jim?
Thank you. Through the Lord Mayor. The State Department guidelines note that there is no ability, for example, property owner to identify that and property shouldn't be on the local heritage survey. So again, this is about under the Heritage Act. So there is no mechanism for someone to appeal it on the local heritage survey. And that's in accordance with the guidelines. So the wording is to notify people of the additional cultural heritage information that's been gathered. And of course, if there's something incorrect or something that someone may have that we're not aware of that could be added. So given that we have done extensive consultation at the very start of this engagement process and we did receive 8 places that we have considered, it's our view that it's actually it will be interesting to see what kind of responses we get back to the fact that properties are put on the local heritage survey.
it's our presumption that there wouldn't be a great deal of concern because it's really a cultural heritage consolidation of information. So our view was bringing it back to council twice when really the information is more about whether or not it's heritagely, if the heritage information is correct, which we have already gone through that process. So in effect, this process, unless someone has additional information that changes the significance, this process adopts the local heritage survey information, and as you can see, it's an extensive body of information, and we chose not to choose to put it up twice if need be. Thank you.
Thank you. I understand that point. From my reading of the 1,500 odd pages, which thank you very much for that. Yes, thank you. It looked like the consultant element did not necessarily go inside these properties. It looks like often that they were assessed by desktop assessment or a drive-by or whatever. So would a material fact that if one of the people who owned these properties came up and said, right, you listed it, but we know it's terrible inside or we know it's about to be knocked down or something like that, would that affect the listing?
Through the Lord Mayor, if I can use an example that sometimes even demolished sites would still stay on a local heritage survey because it's about the cultural heritage and the details of what's happened previously rather than, again, the inherent condition of a building, which is more around the heritage list per se.
Yeah, I understand that. It's just on those papers, it has a listing of whether something is good or fair or whatever condition it's listed at. So are you saying that factor is not taken into account whether something's listed or not?
Chair.
Thank you. I'm happy to take that on notice to get specific details in regard to the scope from element. So, again, within the guidelines, they are quite clear of the equipment, furniture, fittings and other objects being part of the consideration, but I can give you some more detail prior to next week's meeting.
Thank you, General Manager. Are there any further questions? Councillor Fleet.
Thanks. Page 81, discussion point 8, the last sentence, the inclusion of these places will ensure that the city has a representation of heritage places from all neighbourhoods and their contribution to the city's history is recorded. I know we've got to do this because of the Act, but are we going to come up with a plan to use it in a new way? How is it stored? Is it just chucked online or are we going to do something different?
Let's find out, shall we? General Manager?
Thank you. Through you, Lord Mayor, most definitely it is our intent to, in the next stage, being look at how we can make this information live, and it becomes an asset around the cultural heritage history. So rather than continue to focus on just the forms, our next phase will be how do we translate this into live information, and the expansion of the Heritage Month, for example, will give us a really good foundation to do more of that work and use the information. Thank you.
Thank you. I think these are a bit touchy at the moment. I wonder if, should we turn off and turn back on? Is there power down? Yeah, it could be that. Yeah, how long is that, do you reckon? I don't think we can continue like this, can we? That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? It sounds and feels like the battery. Councillor Andrew, give it a go. Was it maybe? No, I think it was a few more than just close. Let's give it a go, Councillor Andrew. We'll see how we go.
Yeah, just given that the work's been done in clay, the data on the places of significance, and I guess, you know, it doesn't really matter what it looks like on the inside, but, you know, the walking tours, et cetera, we've got on the app, has it been contemplated to include these places on our walking tours of the neighbourhood?
Thanks, Councillor Angie. It is struggling. Have we got anyone we can ask? Or can we? Yeah. GM.
Thank you, through the Lord Mayor. Yes, that is the next phase. Our focus has been, as you can see, this is a huge amount of work to have compiled. That has been where all our focus is right up to this time frame. But our next phase will be to look at how we can translate it through. And definitely that's our next phase once we put this out to notification. Thank you.
Thank you, General Manager. Are there any further questions? No? Okay, we'll invite Councillor Gobbett to come back in. Councillor Gobbett, sitting in the soundproof booth. Somebody else out there that told him to come in, obviously, who could hear. Councillor Gobbett could not. Item 13, Infrastructure and Operations Commercial Services Alliance reports. Amazingly, we've lost two people from our gallery, yet the system has improved itself. 14 is Corporate Services Alliance reports, 14-month monthly financial report, April 2022. Councillor Fleeton, I saw there were some questions from you. Thank you. Any further questions from any councillors? No, thank you, everybody. Let's go to the team outside. I think it sort of fixed itself up. If you want to come back in, and we'll plough on. 14.2, schedule of accounts paid. Any questions on this item? Thanks. 14.3, long-term financial plan, 2022, 2023, 2031, 2032.
Councillor
Fleeton?
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Follow-up. Which might need to be taken offline, but page 16 of our handout, question 5 doesn't answer the question, but I understand potentially why. So if we could get a note on that during the week, please.
Sure. CEO?
Yes, you will.
Thank you. Was there any further, Councillor Fleeton? Deputy Lord Mayor? Anything from you?
No, I felt like Councillor Fleeton that maybe my question had similar reasons for not being clarified around the assumptions for employee costs over the ensuing years, so perhaps it's best to take that one offline as well.
Okay, yep, fair enough, understood. Welcome back, Melissa. We seem to be working for the moment. Are there any further questions from any councillors? Okay, thank you. 14.4... transfer of unacquitted sponsorships to reserve. Any questions on this item? 14.5, the review of delegations. Before I ask the questions, the administration wishes to advise that the attachment 14.5A currently does not display all track changes in full. The correct version with all track changes will be included in next week's OCM agenda. I understand this relates to changes in titles. So, for example, Alliance Manager Grants, the new title is Alliance Manager Grants and Sponsorships, as an example. So that's the nature of the changes that are not represented in full, as I am advised. It's for councillors' benefit. Are there any questions? Yes, Councillor Gordon.
I was just wondering what mechanisms we have in place, excuse me, for items like this that have a statutory deadline. It's obviously come as a late item, so were we tracking it appropriately? Why has it come late?
Sia?
If I could invite the General Manager of Corporate Services to outline the reasons.
A microphone, please, if we could, Chair.
The item, unfortunately, has come late as an oversight of Corporate Services in this instance due to some staffing issues, including my absence on leave, so a one-off in this regard, and I'll make sure that it comes up appropriately in the future.
Councillor Gordon?
Then do we have a mechanism in place so it's not reliant on one person to remember that something needs to be done by a certain date?
I sort of took that reply to suggest that it wasn't reliant on one person, but there was further failure down the line. But if I misunderstood, General Manager, perhaps you can clarify.
Yes, we do have an annual compliance calendar that triggers items such as this onto our radar if they are not already done so. But in this instance, we do have a one-off oversight.
Thank you.
Thanks, General Manager. Thanks, Councillor Gordon. Are there any further questions from any councillors? Councillor Lisa.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Referring to page 6 of 244, item 211, can I just clarify, there was a lot of words on this item, so I just want to clarify. So we've got a procurement under 250,000, a procurement over 250,000, and a procurement over 2 million. Am I reading that correctly? And then what this refers to is we're changing the variation limit of 20% only for the ones under 250. Can I just get some clarity that I am reading that right? Thank you.
GM, if we could go to where you place, GM of Corporate Services.
We're removing the varying limit of 20% for all items in the delegation, as this is not a requirement under our legislation.
Thanks, Jim.
So all tiers of under 250, above 250, above 2 million.
Yep. Okay. GM, to you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Are there any further questions from any councillors? Okay, let's go then to, pardon me, item 15. These are the Chief Executive Officer reports. 15.1 is the appointment of an elected member to the Mindari Regional Council. Are there any questions, councillors? Yes, Councillor Gordon.
Is there a reason we're not proposing to appoint a deputy?
A CEO.
My understanding is it only requires one appointment. Yeah, but in the event...
Councillor Colbert, through the chair, if you don't mind. Stickless for the rules up there, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, but, you know, if that's how it has to be, that's how it has to be. Thank you, Councillor Gobbard.
So in the event that the appointed member is unable to attend, we may then be unrepresented. Is that a satisfactory outcome?
I can see Councillor Gobbard chomping at the bit, but this forum is for questions, as you know. Councillor Gobbard, can you answer that question?
So it's specific to the meeting. There's no deputy. It's if the meeting is unable to be attended, then I have to not refer that to the city, and then the city then has to come back to the council meeting to appoint a deputy for that meeting.
CEO, we'll just go through you for a moment.
Yes, if I could invite the governance manager to provide a little bit more advice. Thank you.
Thank you, through the chair. So we double-checked this with Mindari Regional Council because we did want to propose a deputy, but unfortunately, as their constitution was established under the previous Local Government Act, which they have said did not provide for the appointment of deputies, each time a deputy needs to be appointed, we would have to come to council regardless. So you could nominate like a placeholder deputy, but regardless, we need a council resolution each time, and MRC have confirmed that. Very good. Second question. With the appointment to the... Oh, my God, my voice sucks. To the MRC, we do it the June Council meeting for a July appointment every year in accordance with the MRC constitution. But we also do it in the October following elections. Obviously, that's not really relevant this year, but can we consider next year whether it is appropriate to be appointing someone in July and then again in October and then again, so three times within 12 months.
Mm.
So can we put that as something to consider later? Yeah.
Yeah, that would make some sense, wouldn't it, CEO?
Yes, we will.
Thank you. Thanks, Councillor Gordon. That's appreciated. Is there any further questions from any councillors on 15.1? 16 is the committee report, 16.1, Work Health and Safety Act, Bill 2022. No questions with notice here. Any questions on this item, councillors? Thank you. Let's go then to 16.2, and this is the proposed revision to annual internal audit plan for 2021-2022. I note 5 questions with notice from the Deputy Lord Mayor and a couple from Councillor Gordon. DLM, firstly.
Sorry, I haven't got to the answers of those questions. I didn't get to the last tranche. Sorry.
Sure. Understood. Thank you. Councillor Gordon?
In response to my question 6, it says it appears prudent to commence the audit between 1 April and 30 June 2022. Is that what it's meant to say?
CEO.
So I could invite the General Manager of Corporate Services to respond to that question.
Just the microphone again, if we could. Another question again?
No, we are proposing to undertake the audit June 30th of June, once the other 7 audits that we currently have are underway are complete, and we've had further opportunity to embed the revisions to the Work Health and Safety Act into our current system and culture.
Thanks, Jim. Councillor Gordon?
Is there merit to conducting the audit, notwithstanding the fact we haven't fully embedded the changes, because then we have clarity of what actually does need to be embedded?
Thanks, Councillor Gordon. GM Corporate Services?
Not at this point, given that the Act only came into effect at the end of March. We are undertaking a gap analysis as we speak and revising our work health and safety management plan and all policies and procedures. Once we have done so, we will then have a better understanding of the gaps in our current system, and we can start to commence addressing those gaps. So I would think we use it as an improvement exercise once we undertake what we already know we need to do.
Jim, thank you. Councillor Gordon? Thank you. Okay. Are there any further questions? Debbie Goldman.
Can I follow up? Just a question about the Work Health Safety Act. At the state level, we've got 3 months to implement it. Is the same compliance for the city, local government?
GM Corporate Services.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? I guess the question is, is there an obligation for us to implement the new WAHS Act within a prescribed period?
The obligation is to take all reasonable action to ensure that we are compliant, noting that this is a ongoing process that all organisations are currently facing in our area and across the private sector.
Thank
so,
you.
I would think that it would take us at least another three to six months to be fully compliant with the Act to the utmost highest degree.
Thank you. And just further to that, can we get some clarity around what the implications of the new Act are for elected members?
Yes.
At some point, not today.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, GM. Thanks, DLM. Any further questions from anyone? So we go then to 16.3. That was 16.2, wasn't it? It was. 16.3, Corporate Services Alliance, revised target dates for E2E and audit. There were a number of questions received with notice from the Deputy Lord Mayor, a couple from Councillor Gordon. DLM in the first instance?
Yeah, look, I think they've all been answered. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I appreciate your engagement. Councillor Gordon.
My question 7 regarding the confidentiality of the items, and it says that the cover page for confidential attachments specifies the legislation under why it's confidential, but normally we have that listed on the agenda item so that if a member of the public is reading the agenda, they can understand why it's not in the agenda proper.
Mm-hmm. So what's is your question there, Councillor Gordon?
Why is it not on the agenda proper?
Okay. See ya.
If I could invite the Acting Governance Manager to respond to that question.
Thank you, through the Chair. That is a good point, Councillor Gordon. I think it's been missed off because confidential items in full would definitely have the preamble around what section is relevant. But given these ones are just confidential attachments only, it's obviously been missed in terms of the item in the public agenda. So we'll correct that for next meeting.
Thanks. Councillor Gordon, anything further there?
Just trying to work through this comment in my head.
Yeah.
there are some items that have multi-year delivery and they've asked for the extension of time.
Mm.
And then there's different milestones. So it says that the revised dates reflect the final date for the implementation of all interim milestones. For some reason, that doesn't make sense to me. Is it delivery of all milestones?
Thank you, Councillor Gooden. So, General Manager, Corporate Services, please.
So the revised date requested
mm-hmm.
of ARC is the final deliverable date that represents the cumulative interim milestones. So, yes, it is the final date milestone for the completed full item.
Thank you.
Is that the clarity you asked, Councillor Gordon?
Yeah.
Terrific. Thank you. Thanks, GM. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Apologies, Lord Mayor.
No apology necessary.
But the response to one of my questions says response to be provided. So I just wanted more flavour around resourcing in a heated employment market and what that actually means.
So we're going to go back by you to the General Manager of Corporate Services.
So the skills shortage is one that has been touted in the public arena across the public and private sector. The City of Perth is no different in that regard. We have on at least two occasions alerted members to the skills shortage that we're currently experiencing, and at least two pieces of correspondence to members, including in relation to our capital works. I could only say that we're experiencing it across the board. We're advertising positions not just once, twice, and not getting the calibre of people we need to deliver on the city's obligations. I'm seeing it in our alliance, and I know that other GMs are seeing that across the city. So if you want me to elaborate on any specific skills gap that you're interested, I can do so, but I'd say it's across the board, and the scale and scope of it's considerable across the city.
Jim, and when you say you've mentioned that to elected members, you mean by way of CIBN, correct?
CIBNs, yes. And those CIBNs were in relation to infrastructure and assets and our capital works update, and also on the cost of our projects and escalation in terms of timeframes and project costs.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that response. I guess, am I hearing from you that people are applying for the jobs, but they're just not suitable?
In some instances, they're not suitable. In other instances, we simply are not getting applicants full stop applying for positions. We're making offers for two successful candidates that are being declined post-offer because they've received a better offer. I just recently have experienced that through a couple of roles within my area. And we're having issues even getting consultants onboarded to undertake some of our work when we've tried to outsource it. So really, it's to that scale.
Thank you, Dion. Thanks, Dylan. Are there any further questions? Well, let's go then. But yes, Councillor,
please. Just pondering that answer.
No, thank you. I like when you ponder
it in my mind. So a follow up to that. Yes, everyone knows that there's a shortage, but do we go to market in any way after we try and grab someone and say, look, why didn't you say yes to us, or was there any type of survey done on, was it the salary, was it the home work-life balance, was it the conditions? Was there any other deeper research done other than there's just not enough people? Because I think that broad answer doesn't answer specifics in some ways.
Thanks, Councillor. GM Corporate Services?
Yes, we follow up with candidates to find out why they may not accept the roles that we offer them, including the reasons why they don't accept. In some instances, we have been able to negotiate higher salary pay points to secure the best candidates for the most high priority roles. We also do, on occasions, offer flexible work arrangements where that is a sticking point for a high calibre candidate. So, yes, we do follow up. And if we've used a recruitment consultant, we speak to the consultant to ascertain what the feedback is from applicants in relation to what would make the role attractive to them.
Thanks, Jim. I might just ask the CEO, if I may, because obviously I'm privy to some of the discussions around this, and I there's a recent example which you shared with me. I don't think it's appropriate to say what the position was that you were trying to fill at the time, but perhaps you might just share that example as an example of an answer that might be useful for Councillor Pleaton and others.
Thank you. So 3 months ago, we embarked on a direct approach to potential candidates for a vacancy that we had. The person had a number of conversations, took it up with their home agency or their local government CEO, and the request for us to comment was declined, so that took 6 weeks to arrive at a conclusion, at which point we, through discussions with a potential candidate, did say, well, would you still be interested if it was advertised, which then that process was undertaken, at the end of which time we went through the full interview process, we went through the referee checks, we did a full-blown recruitment process, offered the person the role, and the person declined. Person declined because they had been given a better and bigger opportunity within their organisation. I think it's fair to also suggest that the person had been working in their organisation for over 10 years, and so actually that in itself is a major shift. So we were offering more money, and obviously the opportunities within their own home organisation were far greater than this.
As I recall it being explained to me, so they were offered a position with us, then informed their current employer, at which point they received an updated offer where they were, or an increased position or a change to their own circumstances, which then resulted in them coming back to us and saying, I've got a better
opportunity. I think, though, the nuance in that is that the organisation involved was approached initially as far as the secondment and then understood there was then going to be a full-blown process. So, regrettably, we spent 3 months, which has not arrived at a result.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Can I ask a follow-up, Lord Mayor? So that aside, just back to the answer, the recruiters, so I'm talking about the front line, the people in planning I'm particularly interested in because of the ramifications and a delay to our scheme, the people doing the work. What are recruiters saying when you go back out and say, look, what's the feedback about the city?
General Manager of Corporate Services.
So just before answering the councillor's question, I would just like to elaborate on our CEO's comments to say that counter offers from incumbent employees is becoming more common and more aggressive in terms of them trying to retain candidates that are considering moving on from their roles. So there's an example there, but there are plenty of others that we're having at the moment with counter offers. In relation to the recruitment consultants that we utilise, and we have our own recruitment team who also seek feedback from candidates, we have actually in the last 3 months recruited a senior a team member to that just focuses on recruitment. That's their key role, and and we have added an extra resource into their team. So we have two full FTE now, whose role it is to focus on recruitment for the City of Perth, and looking at more progressive, more proactive ways for us to recruit than we have done in the past. And I would also say that some of the large consultancies around town are also doing that, because what we've started to see is that recruitment companies themselves have got a thin pool of people that they're pulling on, and the cost of their placements is increasing significantly. So some of the feedback we get on from them in relation to roles, it can be very specific depending on what the role is. But generally speaking, it's often about money. It's about flexible work and the ability to have options to work from home, to work part-time. That's certainly a one that's at the foreground. We have occasionally, we hear from consultants that some candidates are reticent to join the City of Perth because they know that it's been through an inquiry and that we have a tough environment here with a lot of catch-up and a lot of fixed work that isn't necessarily enriching or motivating for people to join because they have to balance BAU with transformation and compliance. And these are not factors that appeal to every candidate. Some of the other factors that we hear about is that there just simply aren't people out there that are available for these roles. ICT being a case in point. Yeah, there's a raft of reasons and they're often dependent on the particular role. For planning, for instance, yeah. The state government has really amped up its game in terms of securing planners. Their pay rises have kicked in terms of attraction and retention at the Department of Planning. Organisations like Main Roads, the PTA, other organisations and GTEs, state government-owned enterprises, offering planners good opportunities at the moment, as are the third-party consultants in this space. So through the chair, we may want to get the GM of Economic Development to add to that picture, because I think it's a good one, because it's
It's a tough market. We're hearing it. It's a tough market. We get it. We get it. Yeah, we're all living in this community. CEO and then the DLA.
Thank you. If I could, to the councillor's point, he's asked specifically about the implications on some of our very important projects and how certain professional groups that are required could be in high demand. If I could ask the General Manager Planning and Economic Development to draw on some very recent experience.
Yes, thank you. So in the planning space, as per the GM Corporate Services advice already, we're doing it a bit tough at the minute. We've had a resignation late yesterday, which I found out about this morning. One of the key people working on our planning scheme went to a private sector job that just paid quite a bit more, and it was moving to the private sector. We advertised, and I won't say what the role is, but for a more senior role to work in that team. And as of yesterday, we got a handful of applicants, and most of them were applicants international in unrelated disciplines. So I think the market is really hot, as the GM said. A lot of planners, when the market heats up, tend to jump to the development industry.
Mm-hmm.
Local government planners tend to jump to the next level or to private sector, so we're battling in the planning space.
Thanks, Jan. Was there anything further, Dylan?
I just had a quick question. Sorry, I know we're labouring on this a bit, but obviously when I go online and I look at websites like Seek or conversations online about working at the City of Perth, a lot of people say that there are great people at Office, you know, there's lots of great people that work here. Do we have a program where we have a pathway for junior people to step up and take more senior roles? And I guess there's never a greater opportunity than in a skill shortage.
Through you, GM Corporate Services.
At the moment, we do not have a formal pathway. It is really something that we've identified as a high priority for the city, and we're looking to link it with our learning and development framework that we have allocated budget for the next financial year. But no, we do not have a formal program. In saying that, we are about to announce and launch our graduate program for the City of Perth. Start to bring in a more formal and measured approach to bringing in tertiary qualified, TAFE qualified personnel into the city, and in particular via a a formal 12-month program that can lead to permanent employment for a number of new graduates. So certainly we've commenced work, but the overall and elements of the program are about to start to be rolled out, but the overall program, it's still in early days.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, CA?
And if I could just add, we also do participate in a local government mentoring program where some of us mentor other officers from other councils and vice versa. Some of our mid-tier managers also participate on that, although sometimes we lose people as a consequence.
Mm. That's one of the dangers, isn't it? Thanks. Any further questions from any councillors? Thanks to the GMs for their responses and you, CEO. Let's go to 16.4 audit reports. There was a question, Councillor Gordon from you, I believe. Good notice. Thank you for that. Thanks, Councillor Gordon. Any questions from any other councillors? 16.5 is outstanding audit recommendations, May 2022. None with notice. Any further questions, councillors?
Sorry, Lord Mayor, the discussion we had at ARC, maybe the Chair could answer this. There was a lot of back and forth at one point towards the end of the meeting where we were talking about timeframes being extended. Was that accurately captured in from that agenda which we were changing into this? Have you noticed those, you know, is that reflecting what we talked about? Because that meeting went on and on and on.
Yeah. Councillor Leasy, you're the Chair, obviously, of Audit and Risk. Do you feel able to answer this question, or do you...
We can take it on notice.
Let's
take it on notice to compare, Lord Mayor. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Councillor Leasy. CA, anything further there?
No.
No? Okay. Were there any further questions then on this one? 16.5? 16, thank you. 16.6 is a review of Council Policy 1.1, attendance at events. Deputy Lord Mayor, you had a couple of questions here, I saw.
Yeah, no, it looks like they've been properly answered. I just wouldn't have thought that city convened working groups was considered an event in the sort of layman's.
Can I ask that question?
Is it?
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Leading.
Has the answers presented? Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Anything further from anyone? Yes, Councillor Angie.
Yeah, I just have a couple of questions. In, where is it, page two of the policy,
Which one's 286, Councillor?
287 of the pages, the 300, and page two of the policy. It talks about the gift, it talks about excluded gifts. So at paragraph 5B7, it talks about gifts from a local government. So, for example, this week or in the last week, we all the councils received an invitation to a City of Perth event being an exhibition launch. Now, that's not, as Deputy Lord Mayor just pointed out, a City Convened Working Group or whatever, which is pre-approved. Does that type of event then fall into this local government category as an excluded event?
Thanks, Councillor Angie. I'll invite our governance consultant to answer that question.
Lord Mayor, let me clarify that. But off the top of my head, yes, it does.
So it falls into paragraph 5B7, being a local government event, is it?
Yes, but okay. I think we could clarify that policy is implemented.
Yeah, that would be handy for all of
us. As things
ongoing.
Unfold and as we experience, and sorry, through you, Lord Mayor, as we hit stuff, I suspect this policy is going to need expansion and revision.
But could that be a question on notice to just clarify that? We've all received that invitation in the last week. And then the other one, page 4, so page 289 of the 300, In capitals, it's got discretionary grant funding agreement, which looks like a defined term, but I can't see the definition of it anywhere. Did I miss something? Or
you got that? So again, to our governance consultant. Are we...
Page 289 of 300.
Yeah, 12C refers to events held by entities under a discretionary grant funding agreement, and that's all capitalised, implying that it's a defined term, but I can't see the definition. There is a footnote which refers to the City of Perth inquiry, but doesn't provide any definition of that, what that term actually means.
It's a date and a page that it appears on. Is anything from you, governance?
Through you, Lord Mayor. I think we could take that on notice and give it some more clarity.
Yep. And then, sorry, one more question. The change 12C, paragraph 2, discharging duties has been crossed out, and it now talks about in an official capacity performing a duty, which looks very similar to paragraph 1, performing an official role at an event. So obviously that paragraph 2 is now much narrower. So just thinking about the types of invitations elected members get, again, in the last few weeks we were all sent an invitation to an event on at the moment, and it seems to me that under the amendment, that invitation which was sent to all of us would be a prohibited event, because it wouldn't be the case that there's 9 of us performing official duties.
Yes. Unless attendance is an official duty.
If we could have clarity on that.
Through you, Lord Mayor, these are prohibited events as representatives of the city. And 12C is unless performing. I agree that I and II, 1 and 2 subparagraphs, are quite similar. And again, maybe what we could do is go away, hone that, as things unfold, and come back and refine it, because I suspect we may want to add, as time goes by, more events to this policy.
Because it looks, the way it reads to me, in an official capacity, performing a duty, is that you're there in an official capacity, but you're also doing something, whereas the event that I'm thinking of, that we're all invited to, and it happens quite often, there just could be 9 people just turning up. So that was potentially covered before by discharging the duties. But
See ya.
Drawing on some of the members of the Policy and Legislation Committee, I recall that this was actually part of a broader conversation, and that in an official capacity was to capture, as an elected member, your role is to represent community and to participate. And that's why it was actually changed from performing of the official role, which is when you may do a speech or be called on to do have a more active role. And then the second amendment was to really capture, yes, performing duties, which might be required, but equally being present. So
if we could tweak the wording then, just in an official capacity or performing a duty or something to make that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Are there any further questions from any councillors on that one? No? Any council group? No. Okay. 17 motions of which notice has been given. 17.1 notice of motion. Councillor Brent Fleeton, scheme amendment dealing with community centre land use. Are there any questions on this item?
It's not a point of order, it's just a question. Do we usually do this?
No, from memory we don't.
No.
But it is there. So, you know, May, got a script in front of me, I'm following it. So, no, we don't. So, why is it there? Right, yes. Why is that there? Is there a reason that's there?
I'll invite the governance manager to provide a response.
Through this chair, it's just because the NOM was received with so much notice that we included it on ABS agenda, and it would make sense that you're given an opportunity to ask any questions if you have any, rather than waiting until next week, which can, of course, do that then as well.
Well, that's very good of you, Governor. So that's a backhanded compliment, Councillor Fleeton.
I just don't want it to start any debates.
No, this is a forum for questions, as we all know. So do you have any questions here? No. Okay. 17. Anyone else? Any questions? 17.2. So the same, but it's here. The stakeholder. Is that the same one? That is that one. No, that is different. Sorry. Stakeholder events at Council House. So same applies. We're going to leave that for next week. Yep. 18 is matters for which the meeting may be closed, and there are none tonight. Urgent business will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting. Deputy Lord Mayor, you weren't here when I mentioned that I will be away next week.
Bonjour, no.
Thank you. And the Deputy Lord Mayor will be the presiding officer at the next ordinary council meeting, which will be on Tuesday week. So with no further business, I'm going to declare the agenda briefing session closed at exactly 6:11 p.m. A reminder to elected members that dinner is being served upstairs on the 11th floor.
Please all rise for the Right Honourable, the Lord Mayor of Perth, Mr. Basil Zemplett.
Thank you.